Pacific Justice Institute. This is The Legal Edge.
The U.S. Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled in favor of a Shawnee State University philosophy professor First Amendment rights. University officials punished him after his refusal to refer to a biologically male student's request to be called a woman.
We rely on your generous support to continue to provide justice for all. Learn more at pji.org.
It's the Ramsey Show, where we talk about your life and your money. Listen weekdays at noon on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio station.
I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
And we co-host Writing Roots.
It's a 10-minute podcast in which we, an author,
and her editor,
cover lessons we've learned about the writing process.
Writing Roots is available on iTunes, Spotify, and anywhere you find your podcasts. And don't forget to always
write selfishly.
North State Now is a magazine formatted show at 6 p.m. every Thursday night. The first Thursday is yours truly, Linda Bott, featuring what's going on in our town. The second Thursday is hosted by Michelle Slade, featuring heroes of the North State. The third Thursday is hosted by none other than James Masada and Rhonda Alby from Enjoy the Magazine and Enjoy the Store. Our newest edition is the fourth Thursday of the month, Women of Vision. That's North State Now, Thursday at 6 p.m., also streaming on KCNR1460.com.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51.
Hi, my name's Nick Gardner. I have a show here on KCNR, Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. every other Sunday. The name of my show is Poke the Hornet's Nest. I'm going to concentrate on local politics mainly, but we'll talk about national politics also. You'll get the view of the common citizen here in Redding, California. And remember, today is the first day of the rest of your life. Maybe it's a good time for a new perspective about what's been going on in our town, in our state, in our nation. I hope you tune in and hear the other side of the news.
Everybody, listen up! Hi, this is Senior Chief Rob Burrows with the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center, and I am your host every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 with Battlefield Expressions. Battlefield Expressions is where we talk about veterans' issues, advocacy for our community, and those in our community who help support our veterans. Once again, join me every Saturday morning from 9 to 11, Battlefield Expressions on KCNR 96.5 and 1460 AM.
March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, and there is no better time to get screened than right now. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, colorectal cancer screenings have declined by 86%. And as a result, up to 10,000 more deaths are projected over the next decade. With early detection, colon cancer has a 90% survival rate, and it may even be preventable with a colonoscopy. At Reading Endoscopy Center, our number one priority is the health and safety of our patients, and our center has always been committed to maintaining strict infection control and prevention protocols. Schedule your colonoscopy today by calling us at 530-246-7000 or visiting readingendoscopy.com. Visit readingendoscopy.com.
Hi, this is Matt. I'm your host of Liberty Unabashed, a new show on Sundays, 8 to 9. We're going to have some good music, some deep thought, and I hope you check us out.
These are unprecedented times. Challenging how the YMCA works to strengthen community as we have for nearly 170 years. But we've always found ways to help people and communities in times of crisis. Right now, Ys across the country are providing emergency child care, shelter, food programs, and outreach to seniors. But we can't do it alone. Whether you're connected to the Y or have a fond Y memory, we need you to stay with us. Reach out to your local Y today and stay with us for a better us.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide three delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
At Shasta Regional Medical Group, we're focused on the health matters that matter to you, like having a primary care doctor you trust. Our physicians put patients first. They take the time to listen to your needs and concerns, and they provide the information you need to make good decisions about your own health. At Shasta Regional Medical Group, you have an integrated network of caregivers and specialists working to serve you in a compassionate, patient-centered environment. We're conveniently located right across the street from Shasta Regional Medical Center. To make an appointment, call Shasta Regional Medical Group today at 605-4260 or visit us online at ShastaRegionalMedicalGroup.com. Shasta Regional Medical Group. Your primary care is our primary concern.
Did you know that the City of Reading has started licensing commercial cannabis activities within the city limits? Synergy is the first of the city's approved retailers to obtain licensure, bringing to the Reading area the most experienced retailer in the North State. They will ensure that your visit is both professional and comfortable. Access is simple and discreet. Synergy has a private 25-space parking lot at the back of the building. Synergy is located at 345 Hempstead Drive, Reading.
A Moment in History by KCNR and historian Dottie Smith. It's growing time for the Trees of Heavenly Light. They are also known as Chinese locust trees, trees of heaven, China sumac. They are native to China but are found in many places in Shasta County, especially the areas of the 1849 gold rush where the Chinese lived and mined. Archaeologists believe seeds of the trees were innocently brought here by the Chinese miners in their hats and mats. Once they got hold, they multiplied and multiplied. They have a good root system. It's hard to stop because it sends out runners in every direction. The young shoots look like giant asparagus, but quickly put out leaves. The young trees have an odor that many find offensive. These trees can be found by the thousands in the town of Shasta throughout the gold mining districts and in many places where you wouldn't expect them. This moment in history was brought to you by KCNR and Shasta County historian Dottie Smith. For more stories like this or exciting books by Dottie, find Dottie Smith on Amazon Books or go to the Shasta County Historical Society.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has a chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
I expect it to be a lot easier.
I didn't know what step to take next.
I was transitioning from the military.
I was a vehicle gunner.
An avionics specialist.
I missed my unit, my family.
Playing with my daughter, I'd felt like a stranger.
I didn't have a clear sense of what to do next.
And then I thought, if I'm going through this, other veterans have gone through it too, right?
So I reached out, and I saw that I wasn't alone.
Go to MakeTheConnection.net to learn how other veterans have overcome the challenges of transitioning out of the military.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Do you have a crazy schedule and can't seem to get to a class to qualify for your CCW, CCW renewal, or maybe learn to use that new firearm you just purchased? Consider a private class with NFI. Learn to shoot a handgun, rifle, shotgun, or even a BB gun. Classes are taught by an instructor that you choose on your dates and location. Give NFI a call at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and I'll see you at the range.
As Shasta County gradually reopens for business, we can all do our part to stop the spread of COVID-19 by wearing a mask when in public. Cloth face coverings help reduce the spread of germs by preventing the release of droplets when someone speaks, coughs, or sneezes. Wash your face covering often, ideally after each use or at least daily. Wash with detergent and hot water and dry on a hot cycle. Here is Shasta County Health Officer Dr. Karen Ramstrom.
Remember, wearing a face covering is not a replacement for physical distancing, frequent hand washing, and staying home when sick. Your mask protects me, and my mask protects you. Together, we can stop the spread.
For more information, including how to make your own cloth face covering, go to ShastaReady.org.
Spring on over for savings at Quick and Clean Car Wash at the corner of Market and Eureka Way next to Dutch Bros in downtown Reading. Buy 5 car wash coupons and get one free. Or buy 10 and get 3 free. Quick and Clean is a family-owned business. They offer only the highest quality service. Quick and Clean Car Wash at the corner of Market and Eureka Way next to Dutch Bros in downtown Reading. Quick and Clean.
This is RC from Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor. Today we're talking about Trinidad's Espiritu Series No. 2, crafted with tobaccos from Brazil and Nicaragua and wrapped in an Arapiraca leaf. Espiritu No. 2 produces a harmonious medium to full-bodied cigar with extraordinary zesty complexity and earthy notes. Come by the shop and pick up your Trinidad Espiritu No. 2 today, 2143 Hilltop Drive, Reading.
Pro Rehab Physical Therapy and Sports Performance is now open at 3673 Eureka Way. Physical therapists Kevin Elo and Rachel Lang have a combined 29 years of experience in helping those who've suffered orthopedic injuries, strains, and sprains. Kevin has worked with the USA Gymnastics team, NFL Combine, and professional BMX riders. He's also helped members of Cirque du Soleil get back into action. Rachel works closely with seniors and is also a group fitness instructor and adept at returning people to an active lifestyle. Both Kevin and Rachel at Pro Rehab Physical Therapy and Sports Performance are accepting new clients. Give them a call today, 530-533-5030. If you are in need of physical therapy, talk to the experts at Pro Rehab Physical Therapy and Sports Performance at 3673 Eureka Way. Call 530-533-5030. That's 530-533-5030 today.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere ag and turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Good morning, Reading. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
These are unprecedented times. Challenging how the YMCA works to strengthen community as we have for nearly 170 years. But we've always found ways to help people and communities in times of crisis. Right now, Ys across the country are providing emergency childcare, shelter, food programs, and outreach to seniors. But we can't do it alone. Whether you're connected to the Y or have a fond Y memory, we need you to stay with us. Reach out to your local Y today and stay with us for a better us.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Art isn't your pet. It's your kid. It grows up and talks back to you. Joss Whedon.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
Starting the new year, our January series is going to be a lot of writing advice from the masters of writing. So to prepare for that, our question today is, how do I learn?
There is a big mess of writing advice out there. Understanding how to analyze it, how you comprehend it, is part of growing in your skills.
Not all advice, even from people who have made their way in the writing world, is right for everyone. But listening to it, analyzing it, and deciding if it's right for you will help you go faster than trying to discover everything for yourself the hard way.
I really wish I had listened more when I was a newer author. I didn't want to be like everybody else, and I ended up learning a lot of lessons the hard way. And the fact that I have to learn lessons is a lesson. You, our audience, are probably already past that because you're listening to us and therefore already expecting to learn and grow as authors. So, back pat on you.
There are a couple questions that you need to ask yourself when you receive a piece of advice. The very first one is, of course, whether or not you agree.
Some people, having their creation is more like having a pet. It does what I tell it to, it'll stay that way forever. Joss Whedon would disagree, as our opener said. Understanding yourself and understanding where they're coming from changes how you ingest the advice, and if you even should ingest the advice.
If you don't take a step back and consider where you are in your writing and what kind of things that you need to change in order to improve, you aren't going to make progress. And so asking yourself whether or not you agree with a piece of advice will help you see where you are. And then you need to go one step further and ask yourself what evidence you have that either supports or defies that advice.
Another quote we've taken from Joss Whedon in the past is, make it grim, make it dark, but for the love of God, tell a joke. We hear that from him, and then we look at his works. We see Iron Man making the quip of Shakespeare in the Park. That kind of witticism is signature for Joss Whedon.
But there's also plenty of stuff out there that is dark, that is grim, that never tells a joke. So it all depends on the genre and your style personally.
That's the next question you ask when getting advice. Do I share a target audience with the person giving advice? Because if Nicholas Sparks comes to me and says, hey, your writing's great, you just need to have a lot more romance in it, not gonna happen.
He's wrong, because it's not the right genre for that. It's not the right target audience.
I'm more likely to take Lee Child's advice because his audience and my audience overlap quite a bit.
Sometimes it is very good to take advice that challenges the status quo, that pushes you to try something new. Like Lee trying to see if she was a panther, and me finally realizing that maybe I should plot some more.
These bits of advice are the ways that you'll grow, the ones that challenge you. I had someone tell me once that my sentences were too long during fight sequences. I kicked and screamed against it, and I eventually realized they're right. This challenged me to be better, to be more efficient with my words, to flow and be more precise with my word choice in my combat.
So, a lot of advice comes in the form of criticism. This can be a hard way to take advice because it feels like somebody is tearing apart your baby. But criticism is good because it makes us realize we do have a direction to stretch. So Lee, how do you handle criticism?
Generally with a big pint of Haagen-Dazs. Sometimes alcohol is involved. Okay, often. But one of the first questions I answer when somebody gives me advice is, how much do I value this person's opinion? If there's some random internet troll who says your writing is terrible, I don't care about their opinion because they don't have any value in my life. If Lee says, hey, this scene is not working, I trust her opinion on this scene.
For me, when I get criticism, I always try to consider it. I'll mull it over, I'll decide whether or not there's any real basis to it. Because if there's something that somebody didn't like about it, there's probably a reason behind it. So when I sent Toxic to my alpha readers, I had one of them in particular ask me a lot of questions about the romance subplot. So I took that advice with a grain of salt, but I also took some other very good advice from that same person and changed some things to make it a little bit more plausible.
One of the bits of feedback that I've gotten that I've had to ponder quite a bit is when somebody says, oh yeah, just like this other popular culture thing. Well, I'm not copying Martin. I'm writing my own story. But hearing that is a good thing.
It means they're investing in it enough to make those connections in the first place. If they weren't, they wouldn't even try to make those connections. And trust me, no story is 100% unique. Look at Star Wars, Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings. They're all essentially the same story.
Another question that we got is, do you have any advice on not getting discouraged during the editing process?
The first thing is that if you are in the editing process where you have someone else editing your story, remember that they are your friend. They are an ally in your writing process. If you found the right one, they will always be trying to make the story better.
They wouldn't be helping you out. They wouldn't be editing your work if they didn't see at least a good potential in your story.
Also know that you shouldn't be rushing the editing process. but don't delay it either. I know it can be easy when you get discouraged to set it down and not try because it's hard, it hurts, and you feel like the whole thing is terrible, but don't try to just blow through it because you think that it's perfect either.
In the end, a lot of the editing process is about the big picture. It's not just your baby anymore. They are trying to make it better.
Just like our quote at the beginning said, our work, our great works, are kids that grow up and talk back. And if you're listening to your editors, if you're listening to your alpha readers, you'll see this and you'll see it's a good thing for the end.
One last bit of advice on how do I learn is to not only learn from the greats, but learn from the terribles too. If you go to a movie and say that was stupid, figuring out what made it stupid and how to make it better will help you become a better storyteller. Do you have any fantastic epic stories out there in the world that you simply can't stand?
Most of the things that are considered great literary works, I have not read because they're just straight up boring.
Yeah, I had the misfortune of reading the unabridged version of Moby Dick.
Oh, that sounds horrible.
The point of this tangent is to recognize what you don't like. It's okay not to like stuff. And then, of course, don't repeat it in your own writing.
Learn from the mistakes of others. Learn from the mistake of Tolkien. You don't need to go on huge, long tangents to describe a tree. Oh, an old man in the sea. In general, Hemingway, horrible. I know people think he's a great author, but, he's so boring.
I think he might be one of the authors we're covering next month.
Probably, and I'm going to hate it the entire time.
Yay!
So, we hope that you take advice and try to learn from it. Analyze it, figure it out, decide whether that works for you, and learn from it. Learn from all kinds of sources. Learn from the good, the bad, and the ugly.
If someone is directing this advice at you, you don't have to take the advice the way they give it, but you can pay attention to why they think something needs to change and then come to your own conclusions.
Take the advice, learn from it, and really the best way to learn is by doing. And you do by
writing selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writingroots@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
Wherever the art of medicine is loved, there is also a love of humanity. Hippocrates.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
Joining us today is Lorraine Woodworth, a nurse. Welcome, Lorraine.
How do you do? Nice to be here.
So tell us a little bit about you and what you do.
All right. I am a registered nurse, and I started in the 90s in Reading. And for some very odd reason, I've always been fascinated with surgical procedures that alter our functions in some way that have to be adapted, and wounds, and things that a lot of people may not be particularly interested in, but it's always fascinated me. So after I finished my bachelor's degree at Chico State, I went on to get a certification in wounds, ostomies, and continence. So that's my area that I function in, and now I'm a hospice nurse. that's kind of the way I've done. I'm semi-retired, but I still do work.
So in a lot of popular media, there's this certain idea of what a nurse is. You know, people will picture the TV shows. How much of that would you say is true?
Well, nursing is one of those most highly respected professions. Statistically, when they do tests or surveys of who you trust, who you don't trust, there are people who will trust their nurse over their doctor. The best nurses, I think, are people who really love the science of it, the interaction with human beings, and the ability to help people. And those that are just punching the clock for a job, well, you know, they're in every line of work, even your doctors and people like that.
So there's this idea that all nurses are kind, gentle, loving, caring kind of characters who are very sensitive souls. Do you find that to be accurate?
Anybody that knows me knows that's not true. I'm sorry. No, not every nurse is. No, not every human being is. It's a tremendous cross-section of humanity is in the nursing profession.
I feel like it would be a lot like police work or firework of sometimes they start out being bright and hopeful, but over time with all of the things they deal with, they get a little jaded when it comes to optimism in the world.
Well, a lot of that depends on what area of nursing you're in. In my own personal experience, and that's all I have to go by, people that work in emergency, those are the people that are going to see all kinds of negative aspects of humanity. People that work in surgical floors, you know, they deal with medical doctors and post-operative. Everybody has a different job. I think that some people have a gallows type of humor, and they'll see funny in things that other people would shiver at. But I don't think it's intended to be mean or nasty. It's just you have to in some way protect yourself from some of the things that you see. But I've never met a nurse that's deliberately mean or is totally indifferent to the suffering of people. Mm-hmm. I don't think they'd last very long.
So I didn't realize before, and I feel terrible about this now, that there are different kinds of nurses in one hospital.
So let's take the emergency room, for instance. Those nurses are at a specific level of emergency, just stop bleeding, restore breathing. This is what we need to do right immediately. On another floor, there we call med-surg, a medical unit. People come in being sick, or they've just had surgery and they're having a rather normal recovery or an expected recovery. But that nurse will be specially experienced in taking care of antibiotics and hanging the medicines and watching for reactions to the medicines, looking for infections in the wound, making sure that whatever was sewn up stays sewn up, all those kinds of things. In an ortho floor, an orthopedic surgery floor, you have to know about all kinds of different equipment that people come in with, tractions, and they're all hung differently with things to keep a leg that's been broken in place. I mean, every single floor in a hospital has a specific type of patient that they're dealing with. And then, you know, like you get a person like me, for instance, when I worked in the hospital, if I was working as a wound and ostomy nurse, ostomy means opening external mouth to outside the body, and the word before that or the preface is whatever part of the body has been made into an ostomy. Mm-hmm. You've got the person that needs to be fitted with the appliance, and for it to work, you have to educate them. Or if they have a wound, you just do rounds all day with people that have wounds and come up with treatment plans for them. So there's dialysis nurses, nurses that specialize in kidney dialysis. That's a very specific skill and job. I mean, those are just a few of the things that different nurses are skilled and trained to do.
So for an author, it's very important to, if they have a nurse character, what kind of nurse are they going to be in the story? What do they need to know specifically?
Right. Well, for instance, if you have a character in your writing that has a gunshot wound, the nurse can't be a labor and delivery nurse. I didn't even get into that. You want the nurse that knows what to do when a person comes in with a gunshot wound and have had experience. You know that they're going to need x-ray, they're going to need blood, they're going to need all these things. And so you would expect your character and the nurse in that position to have certain levels of skill. Yeah. You got to know what kind of nurse they are.
So we did have a listener have a question for you. The question is, how would diabetes affect a character dying from an infection? I believe this character is writing a post-apocalyptic kind of story where antibiotics aren't readily available.
Oh, well, a diabetic person, if anybody's blood sugar gets to be over 150, the white blood cells do not function efficiently to go after infection. When an infection presents itself, the body itself sets up a defense. And to make it just as simple as possible, when a person has diabetes, their blood is more like syrup than water. The white blood cells can't get to the bacteria in order to break them down and destroy them. So if you don't have artificial antibiotics, then the body is not going to be able to fight its own infection.
Okay.
So get the fluids down and get the blood sugar as normal as you can possibly get it.
Interesting.
But a post-apocalyptic, you're not going to have blood sugar medicines either.
So do you have any stories that you could share with us that might represent what you do for the authors that are listening?
One of the things that I tell is that you learn from your patients as well. I had a patient, an old man. He wasn't in the hospital for this particular problem. He was sick with something else, and he had an ostomy. I was trying to show him how to do it, kind of, you know, I've been to school. I know how to do this kind of stuff. And he looked at me, and he said, young lady, you don't know what you're doing. If you want to do this as a job, you better learn to listen to the people you're taking care of. So sit down and let me show you something. And I was like, okay. I will learn from this old man. Another story in the ostomy thing. I had a lady who was 87, and we're in the bathroom. I was trying to show her how to take care of this thing, and she says, well, you know, I've got to get home and start taking care of Oscar. And I said, Oscar? Who's Oscar? I mean, I knew her family by then. She'd been there for 2 weeks. She patted her side. She says, my ostomy. She named it Oscar. She was gonna learn how to take care of it. Those are the things that you take to your heart every time things don't work out so well. So that, those are two of my stories I can come up with right off the top of my head.
I love them. Yep. So throughout our conversation, you've been throwing out a lot of lingo. What do you think is important for authors to know if they're writing a nurse character, or where can they turn to get and use realistic lingo without it sounding very wrong to somebody who knows what they're talking about?
There's nothing to compete with actually talking to a nurse. But the glossaries that are in nursing textbooks, those are good places, because even if it doesn't answer all your questions, it can give you at least where to start to look for an answer. But I wouldn't put anything in a book that's specific unless you know really what that word means.
Or find yourself a nursing friend to say, hey, does this make sense? Is it real?
Right.
Does it actually apply in this scenario?
I've been asked those questions before, and it's always a challenge to think about it that way. I happen to watch a medical thing, and somebody says something that's really like, oh, come on. You have to say it. You have to mention it out loud, even if you're sitting in a room all by yourself. That wouldn't happen. They wouldn't say that.
I do that with my own job.
Yeah, everybody does.
And I will say, talking from experience, that if you know this nurse outside of this author relationship and you don't preface that this question is about your book, make sure you let them know, hey, I'm asking about motorcycle head wounds for my book, not for somebody that I'm actually.
Hey, I know
that. Having had that panic attack myself.
Yeah.
Yes, well, we say, for research, then ask the question. Don't ask about gunshot wounds unless you tell somebody that it's for research.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us. There's a lot of good information that we have here. Very much appreciate it, and I personally very much appreciate your help in answering these kinds of questions in my own storytelling.
There's nothing more flattering to a person than for somebody to ask their advice. even if it's about a fantasy character in a book. I don't think any nurses will mind being asked these kind of questions. It's very flattering.
So long as the timing is right. If you're in the hospital getting treated for something, that might not be the best time.
Right.
But in anything you do, make sure you always
write selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writingroots@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
Magic happens between the notes. Linda Bott.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
And joining us today is Linda Bott. Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, guys.
So we wanted to give you, our listeners, an idea of what it's like to be on stage, to be performing in front of a bunch of different people. So I dragged Linda Bott in because she's done this since you were a kid, right?
Yes. I professionally started working at 15.
Wow.
So I could say that's when I first started getting paid. But I have been singing, you know, basically growing up in the country where you've got horses and trees and the creativity of what it is to have imaginary friends and audiences. And, mm-hmm. You know, I was the most famous person living in the country.
Yeah. Wow.
So, tell us about how you got your start. What exactly is it that you do?
I was basically just naturally, I think, gifted in the fact that I have a good ear and that my parents belong to Capitol Records. And one of the albums was Barbara Streisand. My brother to this day can't stand listening to anything Barbara Streisand because I emulated every single intonation and tone and breath. And so she basically was my voice teacher. And I learned how to hold my breath and have these big tones. And so that's what I do is I sing. And then down the road, you know, that meant jingles, that meant recording, that meant, okay, do you want to be in this show? You have to learn these lines. Okay, can you dance? So I kind of did the acting, singing, and dancing and did some stage plays and was in a couple theatrical productions in high school and doing stuff like that.
I think the first time I met you was on the local stage here. I was working behind the scenes and helping get set pieces up and on. And it was a Christmas show.
Are you talking Martinis with Santa?
Yes.
I wrote that show.
Nice.
And produced that show. So that was a really big undertaking for me because I had written a song with one of my Nashville buddies named Cam King, and we wrote the song Martinis with Santa. And I thought, okay, now what am I going to do with this song? I recorded it a few times in different albums that I have produced and actually released. Besides trying to fill the seats, making sure the seats were filled, it was just a glorious experience.
So you are a stage performer, you are a singer. A lot of people have a very specific image in mind when they think of someone who's a performing artist. They think about actors, actresses, the glamour, the flashing cameras. They think about Broadway and all of the
jazz hands?
Jazz hands.
Literal jazz hands.
I don't know. So that's interesting because I think we all see the world through our own personal lens. Mm-hmm. So I would say that, first of all, it's a craft. There's a lot of grunt work involved in what it is. People just think you just roll out of bed and you have no idea the grunt work that goes into performing and what it is to, it's a lot of energy to put on high heels and put on clothes. And when you're hungry, you'll take any job. I used to say to my agent, just give me the Ramada Inn, I'll take a piano bar for $30. And that's the truth.
So if you could embed an idea into our audience's mind of what you do, what would it be?
I connect with people. I try to please people. It's an energy for me to feed people. but it also feeds me. So I feel like when I feed them, they feed me. It's a cycle. It's an energy circle.
What kind of mindset do you need to have to do what you do?
Well, I would say a lot of entertainers are very insecure. They need to have the acknowledgement, but ultimately the redemption. There's like a, oh yeah, you think because I'm tall and I'm blonde, I can't belt out a note, I don't have a brain. That has always been great for me to go like, as soon as you open your mouth, people are like, what? So what does it take? It takes a lot of chutzpah. It takes a lot of going through doors when people say, no, you can't do that. Well, watch me. You know, again, I heard another interview recently of Kelly Clarkson that said, you tell me no, and I'm going to show you how good I can do it. You know, you have to believe in yourself because there's constant people who are going to tear you down and say things, or, you know, you may be thinking you're saying the word pink and somebody says, look at how she says the word pink. I mean, that's such a weird analogy, but it's true. Does that make sense? You have to develop thick skin because you're told 9 no's for 1 yes, no matter how good you are.
So think of your very first live performance to your very last live performance. What is the difference between how you feel before stepping on that stage?
When I think about my first really live performance, that would have been like in 7th grade with the jazz band and being body conscious, not sure of my energy, not sure of myself. And now at this age, I'm just, hey, you know what? I've got 3 different dress sizes in my closet, and I'm going to be who I am today in this moment. And I don't know what's going to come out. I'm prepared. But, you know, I remember this time like 4 years ago in the same place I was supposed to be performing, and they canceled the outside performance and put me upstairs. Talk about pulling out all of my shtick. Because I was inside now in a very small room. So, yeah, I was upstairs, and I remember it was summer like this. The fires had been raging. I said to the people putting on this event, do you really want people to sit outside in the smoke? That was just really an interesting night. It was fun, but, boy, I had to do some sing-alongs. And I don't know, about this stage of my life, I'm not really interested in sing-alongs. It felt like we were going to do the Hokey Pokey next.
So what is it like backstage?
There's a variety of different elements to backstage. Backstage could even be a coat closet, because trust me, I have oftentimes had my dressing room be a coat closet where I brought my own light and my own mirror, just some place to change costumes, into having the real backstage like in Las Vegas, where you do have the chaotic dressing room, fresh flowers on the table, a piano, where you do your scales before you hit the stage, or if you're with a group, you're harmonizing so you can pitch in before you hit the stage. So it's a variety of different things. Now, like this jazz gig coming up, it's going to be outside. So my stage will be the car before I get out there and say, okay, I'm ready, guys. Let me schlep. When am I going to schlep the microphone and the PA system? Tell me what I need to do. You can't have an ego when it comes to that. You just got to pull up your big girl panties and you get out there and let it rip.
Is there anyone in particular that you think has really changed the industry of performance?
Well, recently I saw Lady Gaga, and it rocked my world. Her audience had gay, straight, grandmas, every color of the rainbow, every generation, and everybody partied. And I love that. I really love that. I mean, Cher does that too. People who I think really changed a lot of genre bending are people like Dolly Parton. My former drummer in Nashville toured with her, so I got a chance to go backstage and meet her. And she was so real. I was like, I'm taking your time. I don't want to take this picture. And she goes, come back here, honey. You didn't get a good picture. So I took another picture, and I was thinking, oh, my gosh. And she was as real as the day comes. I don't think that woman has a fake bone in her body. So she's very prolific. And my drummer, Chuck, who's then her drummer and everybody else's drummer, had said that when you go on the road with her, expect a phone call at 2 or 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and she's going to be talking, what do you think about this line? And she's constantly writing. And so I think that she's been somebody who really inspired me as far as how long she's been around, and she's covered every genre and written books on top of it.
Do you have any final advice for an author who wants to write a performer in their book?
I would think about the words that I had said earlier that would be self-image, insecure, knowing it, growing it, ego. Yeah, also going through your fears and developing more of the character as far as finding their apex or their zenith.
Is there any industry lingo that you can kind of define for them so they can use it for their character?
Wardrobe malfunction. Go on with the show, no matter what. Staying in pitch even when the band is playing in the wrong key. Not letting the hecklers make a joke with them, but don't let them disrupt you. Because there's always going to be somebody or something behind you on stage falling. Just malfunctions or mistakes, and you must go on with the show. If I were to mentor somebody or teach them, is that just remember that the magic happens between the beats. It happens between the notes. So many times before even going into a song with the intro, this is what I love about jazz and interpretation, is that I can take my time and I can look at the players and say, I'm not ready yet. And they know if they read my body, we're going to go around one more time or you're going to watch my shoulder and I'll go in. So that's the same thing with the magic happens between the notes.
All right. Well, thank you to all of our listeners. Remember, if you're writing characters, make sure you find the right sources for how they really can be represented correctly through their books. And as you write, remember what we always tell you.
Write selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writingroots@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
Hey guys, I'm Bob the Drop. Welcome to my podcast. Do you like water? If you do, you're going to love me. I'm pure and simple. I'm talking refreshing. Yeah. Spent 500 years in a glacier. The boy was that cold. I never was and never will be tap water. Nope. Bottled at the source, the base of Mount Shasta. Yep, pure and simple. Naturally the best. You can try me by calling 1-800-922-6227. Mount Shasta spring water.
Then Goliath, a Philistine champion from Gath, came out of the Philistine ranks to face the forces of Israel. He was over 9 feet tall. He wore a bronze helmet, and his bronze coat of mail weighed 125 pounds. 1 Samuel chapter 17.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Essis. And today we are talking about basically just people, but magically bigger people.
That would be the giants. Now, we're not talking about Andre the Giant giants, not people who are just incredibly tall. We are talking about actual mythical creatures, legends, tales of races of tall people.
Across the world, a lot of cultures show tall people as powerful people. I believe there are two different Shinto emperors who are reported to have been more than 10 feet tall. So at first sight, if your hero is encountering a giant, they can be very intimidated without even talking to or encountering physically.
So when we're talking about these mythical giants, the biggest thing about them in most legends is that they're basically people, but big. They are sometimes slower, less intelligent, but always strong.
And I've found cannibalism is something that we see a lot of, or at least eating humans in some way. You know, grind your bones for bread kind of a mantra. We see that in a couple of different giant stories around the world.
I have a hard time siding with Jack on the Jack and the Beanstalk story. What would you do if somebody invaded your house and stole your stuff?
Probably exactly the same thing.
So let's get into some examples of giant or large, intimidating, strong creatures. Of course, you have your trolls and your ogres and your orcs.
A lot of the references to giants are an alternate race, similar to elves and dwarves, where they are human-like, but not. They aren't exactly gods. They aren't demonic in any way. They're mostly just a different kind of people.
In Norse mythology, you have the Jotuns.
And to be clear, the Avengers mythology as well.
Of course, the Frost Giants from you.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.